This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Great. We chanted Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva when deeply practicing. Avalokiteshvara is very widely known in the world as Guanyin. Avalokiteshvara is a male figure in India, but a female figure in China. I kind of like that. You can refer it to he or she or it. And Guanyin or Guanshiyin means observing the sounds, or in the sense of the Buddhist context, listening to the cries, listening to the cries of the world. So what I'd like to talk about today is from that standpoint of compassion, which is what Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva is about. From that standpoint of a compassion, communication. American Buddhism is largely concerned with lay practitioners rather than monastic practice as it was done in Asia. So communication, I'm sure, as all of us know, is a huge part of our practice. And there are precepts in the Buddhist form talking about communication, but still there's not necessarily a great deal of conversation about how to do it skillfully. And it is also so interesting how it's non-intuitive to communicate well, to communicate compassionately. So I want to address some of that today. Why is it so easy to be unskillful in it? And how can we make some steps towards skillfulness? So I'm sure we have all been quite hurt in communication. You know, the so-called saber-toothed tiger in modern lives largely takes the form of words. I'm sure we've been hurt by words. I'm sure we have hurt with words. It's part of the experience of being human, of relating to one another, of connecting with one another. I've had the experience of being very hurt with words. I've also had the experience of being very healed by it. And certainly by communication here, I don't just mean verbal communication. I mean more or less everything. You know, nonverbal is also communication. And if we include the communication with ourselves, it really is everything. Many people are much more violent toward themselves than they are toward anyone else in their lives. I would say I used to do that too, but not anymore. There's a healing ability of connection. It's part of what being alive means, is this continual process toward healing and toward integration and toward connecting with all things. That is a process that takes place all the time, no matter what you're doing, regardless of everything. There are forms and rituals that can deepen that process. I've had the benefit of working in experiential education, or I could call it cultural education as well, where I'm, as part of an organization, take American teenagers to rural China for them to know about a different culture, for them to, in that process, know about themselves, know about the groups, know about what leadership means, what self-awareness means. So a lot of my healing process was jump-started by facilitating this experience for others, for other young people. And I have witnessed the magic of sitting in a circle, not necessarily anyone doing anything, yet healing experience happen almost every time. And it is a transformational, one could even say awakening experience that would change someone's life. A small amount then, but it opens doors, it opens new path for them for the rest of their lives. People are able to say what they may have never told anyone else before. But at times, communication has a power of creating such safety and such love within relative strangers that people heal spontaneously with the support of the group. There was a young woman, I think she's about 15. You know, initially in the introductions, she said she's an only child. But then later in a group, I think it was only the second night, so we barely got to know each other. We were sitting in a circle, and her tears started to fall, and she said, you know, I tell people I'm the only child so that I don't want to get into the complexity. She said, I used to have a brother, but he passed away. There are actually countless stories like that. So this young woman was, you know, able to, in that time, by being open, create a much deeper connection with that group that she would spend the rest of the 4 weeks with, and be able to go into deeper depths of herself. I encourage others to do the same. And by offering some of herself, she was able to help the whole group deepen. There's something, some of this group process come from the idea of deep psychology in the sense of ecological congruence or lack of congruence that we have. So some of these techniques are developed by Joanna Macy. You might have heard of her. She has these group dynamics and exercises that enable people to deeply connect, because it is only if we heal ourselves in some way, only if we can connect with everyone and not have those boundaries of us and them, can we heal the earth. So there are exercises, you know, some of them have interesting names, like one is called the Truth Mandala. It has, you know, very little to do on the surface with, say, mandala in the sense of Tibetan Buddhism, yet it creates some of the same space of a different reality, a deeper reality that's simply created by the people with their intentions. So I want to talk a little bit about why the lack of skillfulness is so common. So we know that the body is a process and the mind is a more subtle process. You know, we were talking about computer programming a little bit earlier. That's a process. Really, there is nothing that is not a process. There are lots of processes that we are simply don't have the subtlety to be aware of, yet there are processes happening nonetheless. Processing happens around us. Processes are also automatic in the sense that once they are happening, there's very little, it just happens. Our physical processes, you can't stop it. Neither can you stop your mind processes or the spiritual processes. So sometimes these processes interfere. And I will take advantage of the smaller room now to do like a mini experiment. So I have a sheet of paper. There are words on it. So words are a kind of a process. Concepts are a process. Concepts are decided on by people. Words are decided on. Something means something, right? But by a particular culture, and we make up that culture. But once we decide on that, you cannot stop that. You understand the apple means an apple, a car means a car, etc. You cannot, you know, literal adults are defenseless against words. You cannot unhear a word. Just like once you learn to ride a bicycle, you cannot unride a bicycle. So on a sheet of paper, I have some words. The words are in different colors. The letters, the typeface, or the type are in different letters. I want you guys to read aloud the names of the colors quickly as you can. Okay, make sense? From left to right and up and down. Just read the colors, okay?
Green, red, orange, purple,
quickly.
Blue, black, yellow, red, green, purple.
Not so easy, right? You realize there's some conflict going on. If you guys have done experimental psychology in college or something, you might have done little exercises like this. And we also know that, if these were curse words, the same thing would happen. There would be a conflict. There would be a crash in your mind, essentially. And since this is a Zen center, I spared you the visual assault of curse words. And we also know that if this is an emotionally loaded message, for example, if this sheet of paper said, your mother has cancer, you would have equally a hard time reading the colors. So I want to point out that actually the fundamental problem of communication is this incongruence, is that we perceive multiple messages at the same time. But it's completely human to give out incongruent messages at the same time. So we first to allow that and then aim toward greater congruence. One could say more awakened people are much more congruent or completely congruent. On the receiving side, I also want to say a note about sensitivity. It's always been kind of strange, I think, that in English or in American culture, sensitivity is perceived as a negative thing, which is kind of strange, because wouldn't you prefer a sensitive instrument to a dull instrument? You know, you can decide what to do with that sensitivity, but having that sensitivity, for me, seems to be a good thing. And we are instruments. We're instruments that measure life to make the invisible visible. So when we perceive something incongruent, that creates sometimes discomfort. So when you read that sheet of paper with the colors, there may have been a tiny bit of frustration because there is a clash internally and you cannot read it very fast. Whereas if the words and the colors were actually the same, you would be able to read it much faster and there would be no internal discomfort going on. This happens all the time in life. And seeing something uncomfortable as something to be fixed is the beginning of suffering. in the Buddhist education of life contains suffering. That is the beginning of suffering. Is seeing discomfort as something to be fixed. And in trying to fix things, that's when we start to create violence toward ourselves and others. So now I will talk a little bit about skillfulness, a few principles about skillfulness. The first is to be like Avalokiteshvara, to be willing to listen to the cries of the world, whatever form that takes. To be open to communication, not in the way that we expect it to, but in whatever way it's happening. And part of that being open is to intend well, intending ourselves and others well. We often chant the Metta Sutra here, loving kindness meditation. Joe has talked about gratitude. Many people here have talked about similar things. Having gratitude for others, for life, wishing others well. That is the basis of good communication. And sometimes we're simply not in a good space. And it is important that we find that in ourselves first, for example, to just sit down. In the Native American traditions, they use a lot of analogies. And one that I heard recently is that, you know, there may be a pack of animals, and often they'll create more or less kind of a circle with the protectors on the outside. But if a particular animal of this pack is not feeling right in some way physically, or just somehow not right, that would the animal would often just intuitively not be a part of the pack until they are sort of right in their way again, and then they come back and join the pack. So there is sometimes a way of realizing and being compassionate to oneself to give yourself the time and space to say, you know, aloneness is what actually would help me right now. And then rejoin the communication. So one of the important concepts in communication is called nonviolent communication, NVC. Violence seems to be a strong word here, but I think it's interesting to think of what I mean, the desire to fix things, to fix ourselves and fix others as violence, that sort of non-acceptance as violence. On the other hand, of violence is both compassion, but it's also what I call responsibility. In communication, if you have two people talking, both people have 100% responsibility of what gets communicated. Not each person has 50%, etc., but each person has 100%. That's important to keep in mind, is being willing to take complete ownership of your experience, your own experience. I also like the play on words of responsibility as responsibility. We have the responsibility in any situation, and we do also have the duty to respond. Of Koben Chino Roshi, the founder of this temple, said something about there is so much value to our unique human lives. It's such a great responsibility that we need to sit down a while. So having that responsibility is to accept your own feelings, to address things in your own court, so to speak, and not to hit over the net. So some of the principles of nonviolent communication is to start from your own feelings and observations rather than directly going into what the other person, the projections on the other person and what the other person is making you feel. Because what you feel is what you feel. The other person did not cause that. Whatever he or she said might have a totally different reaction or a totally different set of response on someone else. Sometimes communication is difficult. Patience is a key virtue. George O'Keefe said, it takes time to see a flower, like knowing a friend takes time. If all fails in communication, what can be done is to give the other person the experience of a positive experience, which most often that can take the form of reflective listening. Is a positive experience for most people is to hear back what they have said, that they are understood, that they are held simply in that understanding. No further response is needed, just that they are heard. And that can be a basis for much more later down the road, which doesn't need to happen right away. And that is also the process of creating what I call the shared pool of understanding, is if each person or all parties can do the reflective listening that is essentially creating that pool of understanding, or sometimes one could say the emotional bank account that can be the foundation of building a deeper connection and more skillful communication from that. Sometimes there are crucial conversations. You know, there's a book and exercises about that. There are conversations, some conversations in our lives that are high stakes. You know, some of them are professional, some of them are personal. I won't go into details there here, but the foundation is actually not dissimilar between everyday communication and the high stakes ones. It is to be in touch with yourself, to find safety within yourself, to accept what's happening, to create a positive experience for the other person, and to go from there. And between people, something magical happens. In Buddhism, we talk about transmission a lot. You know, what is transmission? that's a kind of a big question. I won't go into it there. But essentially, transmission happens between people all the time. The words don't really matter, but something gets communicated from one soul to another. The stage may be set, the seed is there, the inevitable would happen. I mentioned the organic process of healing and integration is happening all the time. That is often what's happening, aided by another person. In group processes, I mentioned the work with the teenagers in remote areas, in my case, China, before we teach the principles of speaking from the heart, speak only from your heart, and speak to the heart of the matter. I do think that's those are good general principles for communication. And the interesting thing is, when you do that, you'll find that you're not speaking just for yourself. You're speaking for everyone in the room. And that is our responsibility to do. In groups also, there are natural processes that happen too. Like any kind of growth process, in groups there's what we call forming, storming, norming, performing. So the group would go through a good phase, and then there would be storms, conflicts that naturally happen, and then there will be the new norms, a new normal created, and then they can perform, meaning they can coalesce and do better as a whole than as some of individuals. And that would happen over and over and over again. So that's also part of why patience is necessary and time is necessary, and it's part of the acceptance of conflicts, is to know that there's always something on the other side of conflict. So here I'm trying to give a couple of frameworks as well. So that, you know, helps people in your everyday lives to see what's around you, you know, and maybe at a slightly different level. Also, culturally, we know that different communication styles may be the norm, and sometimes they can actually be directly in conflict with each other in terms of creating safety. Like we know for some cultures, like in the Middle East or, you know, parts of Europe and parts of Africa, people expect one another to be very emotionally engaged, right? There's a lot of emotion in the room that they're passionately arguing. And if people are not emotionally engaged, they are perceived as not being fully there. They don't really care. But for cultures such as North America, the opposite is true, where we value rational, you know, dialectical conversation, where emotions are perceived as not having an important seat at the table. So you can see, and you know, of course, different you know, families have different norms too. So what creates safety for one kind of people may be directly creating lack of safety for another group of people. So this is important to keep in mind as well, is how we are used to communicate may be completely left field for others. There's lots of stuff about culture I can talk about. It really reflects that our values, human values, are deeply aligned in a way, but they're also quite different. You know, I see that many of us are from different cultures or have experienced different cultures, or what I call in-betweeners. You know, we find that place in between different cultures that we call home. And sometimes there's a lot to navigate there. In the cultural education work that I do, we sometimes also teach students about direct and indirect communication, for example. I mentioned emotionally engaged and emotionally disengaged, direct and indirect, and there are other spectrums like that that are useful. Just to give a small example, one of my fellow instructors is from Africa, and when he was being interviewed, you know, the interview question was, "What are you most proud of?" Fairly typical, you know, interview question. And in America, for example, people would have talked about something they've done, you know, sports achievements, academic achievements, you know, hardships, etc. Instead of talking directly about himself, he said, "When my father passed away, he told our neighbor that he was proud of me." These examples are always interesting to me. It shows very different ways of being in the world, subtle, but also important, significant. Rabbi Anderson is the abbot of Green Gulch Zen Center, says, "The light in all things is revealed through friendly conversation with them." In all things, not just people, but all things. That's what I've been practicing, or trying to practice, is friendly conversation with all things. I'm perceiving when I may be less than friendly, and accepting that as well. So I want to wrap this up in even a more higher level approach. In practice, we talk about there are two wings of practice, which is wisdom and compassion. And you need both wings in order to fly. So in communication too, I would say there is awareness and skillfulness. You can't really develop one without the other. And when you develop one, the other automatically happens. And the wisdom and compassion part is the same. One cannot be really enlightened yet create a lot of chaos in the world. It just doesn't work that way. Deepening on one side would naturally deepen the other. So when it comes to communication, you know, we can put a lot of words on these two sides, and it really doesn't matter. But one way I could say it is honesty and generosity. And we can all help each other to give each other that, to support each other in having those two wings. That's what spiritual friendship is about. I have benefited so much from being here in the Sangha, to develop those wings, to have the light in me being called forth. And I want to do that for the people in my life here, for you. That is my wish. I will stop there. And any questions, comments about this or about anything? Sure, Todd first and then Andy.
What a topic.
Thank you. I know you would love it.
Yeah. Thank you, Jane, for being here and coming here. 2 years ago, maybe? That's very... you'd say trite, but profound effect on this place.
Thank you.
And people. And on me. And as you know, the cultural references that you is most intriguing to me. So I also find this exposure to different cultures' process of knowing of myself and in fact in some ways in my life more than anything else. Can you, knowing what do you think that is? Okay, you said exposure to different culture process knowing oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, knowing what oneself?
I'm not sure what exact words I used, but I'll speak to the general question. I mean, culture is a very important part of our practice. I mean, we're sitting here on the west coast of America practicing something that came from Asia. So I find these confluences very interesting. But I also think it's important to see underlying all this is what's much more universal, what's more integral, what's beyond the distinctions of cultures, you know? The other talk that I prepared was actually about culture. And sort of between the East and the West, the differences and similarities. And one interesting assessment that I heard is that the West is good at understanding and dissecting things, but not very good at putting it together. So I hear you often wanting to have these distinctions, you know, about different cultures, different ways of being, of knowing. But I would also say there is the emptiness underneath all that, underneath all the form, all the different habits, all the different cultural understandings, what's more common. The form, the different ways of being, is one way of making the emptiness visible. Is that their differences does not contradict that emptiness. Right. Right. Another way to say that is I heard this young Nigerian writer say, if you give up a single story, you regain a kind of paradise. And I love that. We all come from stories. And sometimes we think of ourselves as those stories.
Male, female.
Yes, yes. But if you, in practice, in sitting, those stories fade away. You need those stories in order to know someone, yes, but to know them even deeper is to give up those stories. Great, in greater intimacy, you have no idea what is the name of the person you're with. The name's not necessary. What the name is of the person. If you're intimate with someone, you transcend that name, you transcend that concept, that story, and you regain a kind of paradise with that.
Your talk, thanks for the talk today. You talked about friendliness and honesty, compassion, or some threads in there. In some of our conversations recently, we've had some great conversations about communication, a lot of things really. We've covered the topic of challenge at times.
Yeah.
And which is interesting because at times challenge seems to be appropriate, but challenge can also create chaos.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to hear some of your thoughts on that, of the relationship between challenge and compassion. Can one openly create chaos? Need it to strategize? Is it long and slow? And is there intention in there that is aligned? And is, are there sometimes intentions in there that are misaligned?
Yeah, that's a great question. Sometimes we can feel when we're aligned, and sometimes we can feel when there's something not quite right, right? You know? Sometimes I do walk away from a conversation and I can feel, you know, yeah, I wanted something there. I had an agenda, even though I wasn't so clear about it. But I think it's, I think there is some irk happening that if I'm more grounded, if I'm more aware with myself, I can notice it better. On the other hand, I would also say with my part of my own journey is to allow myself to make mistakes rather than not allow myself to fail and to risk and to create a certain amount of chaos as part of that, being willing to show up in whatever way seems appropriate. So yes, I do, I'm sure I do create a certain amount of chaos at times in my willingness to take taller steps or, you know, and my hope is that I do more good than muddying the waters, and that it eventually, you know, along with the patience and the time it takes to make a friend and the time it takes to see a flower, that all in all, you know, it would come out positive. And I do have trust in that. I do have trust in that. You know, there are, in my own family, you know, there are healing that takes place after 20 plus years. That gives me hope that, you know, the small things, or, you know, really the content doesn't that matter that much in our lives. If the intention is there, I trust that it would ultimately create integration rather than chaos. I was reading a little bit of Nisargadatta Maharaj, this non-dual teacher from India, and he actually said that more or less you cannot prevent chaos from happening in the world, because in the relative world, chaos would always be happening to a certain extent. Yes, I don't want to add to the chaos, but I'm also, I trust that in general, I have a reason to be here, that I'm not going to create more chaos than if I was not here. That is, touching on that is actually one of the themes, important themes for me, which is rightness. I think a lot of us, you know, whatever we grow up with, it's kind of like water. You're not aware of the water until you're out of it. So what I was not aware of for much of my life is a sense that somehow I was not right, that something was always not right. I was somehow wrong. I was doing something too much or too little, not being this, not being that, etc. And until I internally shifted, I did not realize how much rightness shifted my place in the world and shifted my ability to have agency in the world, you know? So I would say, I completely hear your question. I think about it a great deal. And it is how to show up, you know, in our world. But I trust the rightness. In the Tibetan Buddhism, they would call this basic goodness. And this particular shift has really, you know, from basic goodness to rightness, has really shifted my sense of being in the world. And I do completely trust that we're all basically good. You know, even so-called evil, in my belief, is twisted goodness. That you simply need to have the hindrances removed to become goodness again. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, but it's interesting you brought the basic goodness to the heart of my question. Mm-hmm. I think about this a great deal as well, mm-hmm. and that's why the conversations have been helpful and your talk too. There's the term basic goodness, but also another one of Chogyam Trungpa's terms was orderly chaos.
Mm-hmm. And crazy wisdom.
Crazy wisdom. Mm-hmm. That was all mixed into my questions.
So yeah.
Thanks. Good discussion.
Yeah, I love crazy wisdom. Sometimes you gotta do something that's so irrational, but it actually creates order.
On the spot.
Speaking communication, our Tenzo keeps opening the door. I think he's trying to say quesadillas are better when they're hot. But can
Michael?
I ask you a quick question first?
Yes.
Phrase, you said you wanted to be in friendly conversation with all the things. I thought that was really beautiful. So in like just a couple of sentences.
What does that mean?
It seemed like it meant something to you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's in our winter practice period, that was my bigger precept, our sort of overarching precept to practice with is practicing that relationship. Reb Anderson talks about this quite a bit, meaning intimacy. He uses the word intimacy all the time, meaning how can you experience something or connect with something with no space between you, with no boundary, no concepts, no nothing. So it almost feels like this is easier to define with, like, you know, via negativa, like what's not right rather than what's right. But I would say at times I have feelings of for me it's a lot of recognizing and remembering what I felt as a child in nature, especially in nature. And that's a large reason why I'm here at Chikoji, is in nature I feel this. I feel this connection. I feel this intimacy. I feel fulfilled in a very physical sense of these trees giving me something that I understand. And they're not just things. There's no separation. I am being fulfilled. I can then be in the world. I had a direct experience of being nourished in nature. And it happens commonly. It happened when I was very young, but it happens more and more commonly. And I can take that and then, you know, I can realize when I have the same experience in so-called ordinary life, so-called dusty world. And indeed, sometimes I experience that. And so for me, it's being aware of that feeling of being present. I would say another way I would, thank you for asking this question, this is helping me. Another way to say it is when to realize when I feel moved. Because I know when I feel moved is when, essentially, when transmission is happening. And it doesn't have to come from someone. It can come from a thing. It can come from the air around me. But when I feel moved, it's when life is giving me so much, giving me much more than just sustaining me. It's giving me something much deeper. And that is when I am having a much more intimate connection with life itself, whatever form it's taking.
Can we all do that right now?
Can we do that right now?
Can we all do that right now?
Over with food? With nature? Yes, absolutely. Yes. Thank you, and I hope to continue the conversation during lunch.
This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.